Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Callie Fell, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Hello, and welcome back to Venus Rising. I'm your host, Callie Fell. Today on Venus Rising, we welcome Mary. Mary spent the last 4 years on testosterone, buying the lie of the gender identity industry that she could become a man. Today, Mary is detransitioning and sharing her story in hopes that others avoid harming themselves with trans ideology. Not only is Mary a beacon of hope for those with gender dysphoria, but Mary is an animal lover and avid curler. And I am talking about the ice sport that many of us watch on the Olympics. So without further ado, Mary, thank you so much for taking part of your day to talk with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
If it's okay with you, I'd like you to just start with your personal story. You can tell us a little bit about who you were before you decided that you thought you needed to transition or try to transition, and then kind of talk us through, you know, what you thought and why you thought this would help you.
Well, I was just your standard lesbian working. You know, I had no, when I was a kid, I didn't have any gender dysphoria or anything. I didn't like getting my period, but I don't think anybody does. There's right. Nothing that stood out as that I would have wanted to change later on in life. And then when Facebook came out with their, I can't remember how many genders they came out with, like 144 genders you could choose from. I was like, what do these genders mean? So I was going through them and I was looking up what they meant, and I found non-binary, and I was like, well, that sounds like me, because I don't feel like a man, but sometimes I don't feel like a woman because I'm not really into makeup or wearing really girly clothes or anything like that. So I thought I must be non-binary. Mm-hmm. So I went from there and I found a gender therapist. I waited a year actually, because I thought in the past I must have seen a movie or read a TV show or saw a TV show where people had to live as the opposite sex for a year. Mm-hmm. So I dressed as a man for a year, and then I found a gender therapist to help me transition. And the first appointment was like, yes, you're trans. What do you want your pronouns to be? What do you want your name to be? And I wasn't very creative. I just dropped the Y from my name and became Mare.
Gotcha.
I had a coach that called me Mare when I was a kid, so I always liked that name. Okay. So that was my transition name.
Okay. So you decided to dress and live like a man for a year. You went and saw a gender therapist and they kind of affirmed you on the first visit. That's what, yes. I'm hearing. Okay.
And I socially transitioned for about 2 years, and I said I would never take testosterone because it's so bad for you. And then I found out I really wanted my breast removed, because I really had bad gender dysphoria at the time. And I was suicidal too. And I was like, my therapist read my insurance information and said you have to be on testosterone for a year before they'll approve top surgery, double mastectomy. So then the next day I had a friend that was trans and found out what doctor they went to and said, it's informed consent, so you'll get it right away. So I went there suicidal and all and told them I was suicidal and said I wanted testosterone. And they said, okay. They took my blood pressure and a blood test. And then next thing you know, I had a prescription for testosterone.
And so I have two questions. One, if you don't mind answering, were you ever suicidal before you felt like you had gender dysphoria or before you were seeing a therapist about this?
No.
And then my next question was, how long did you have to wait from starting testosterone till your top surgery?
1 year.
1 year. Okay.
So what I got it like 1 year and 2 months after.
Okay. So tell us a little bit then about your experience with testosterone, because you were reluctant to go on it because of things you heard or side effects. You have a friend who's transgender. So why were you reluctant to go on testosterone? And then what was the experience like once you did go on?
I didn't want to go on because of the side effects. I was worried about losing my hair. I didn't like the voice dropping. Then the potential of blood pressure and cholesterol going up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, so what was your experience like once you started taking it?
It was sweating all the time. It was gross. I mean, you had to take a shower twice a day, change your underwear twice a day. Your body hurts because your fat is shifting, so you hurt all the time.
Did you feel emotional at all, or just kind of even keel, or?
Flatline.
Yeah. Did your suicidal ideations go away, or did you think that helped it, or?
Well, after I had top surgery, my gender dysphoria went away just like that. And so did my suicidal ideation.
So you feel like it helped?
I say it helped at the time, but I don't know if it helps now.
And why do you say that?
Because I would rather have my breast than have anything else. Because we never delved deep into why I was actually suicidal. It was just because I have gender dysphoria.
I see. So can you dive into that a little bit? Because I can see how our listeners might be like, oh, okay, so you have gender dysphoria and you're suicidal, which that's a narrative we often hear, right? The two kind of go hand in hand. And if we don't give affirming care, then someone is going to commit suicide. That's what parents are told about their children. And so here you are, you have gender dysphoria, you got medical, you went through medical transition. And you claim that it did help that, but now you're saying it wasn't worth it. And so can you unpack that? Because I think it is a little confusing.
It is confusing. The gender dysphoria like went away in a poof. I mean, it was like it never existed. And I regretted top surgery, double mastectomy. I regretted it pretty much like the week after. The first week I was on adrenaline. And then after that, it was like, did I really do this? And then I felt like there was no going back on testosterone, that I had to live life as a man.
So you eventually, though, stopped taking testosterone, and you've been testosterone free for about a year. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
A little over a year.
Well, congratulations, I guess. So what was your tipping point then? Like, why? So you had, was it just that the gender dysphoria went away? And so you were like, okay, I'm going to take myself off testosterone. Or what was your experience like coming off of testosterone?
Well, I wanted to come off 2 years prior, and I talked to my gender therapist, and she said, why would you want to come off? Because it calmed you down. Because before I had testosterone, I had rage around that time of the month.
Mm-hmm.
So she was like, you don't want to go through that again. Because it was bad. And I was like, you're right, I don't. And she talked me into staying on testosterone, even though I wanted to quit. And I eventually stopped seeing her because there's no point anymore. So I was on my own, and I had time to watch YouTube videos of people during detransitioning, and then the 60 Minutes report with hormone hangover, Grace, and just books. And reading Twitter, because I was a member of Twitter before I ever tweeted about being detransitioned. I was a member, so I read what other people were tweeting, and then Reddit, the subreddit Reddit of detrans. I read that a lot and posted it on there, and just did a lot of thinking. I mean, COVID really helps you think, because you were locked down, couldn't go anywhere.
So would you say then, I guess, what do kiddos, what do adults do then with gender dysphoria? You went down the medical pathway and you're saying that wasn't the answer. So what do you recommend, or what advice would you give to maybe teenagers or young adults who are experiencing this gender dysphoria?
Stay off the internet for one thing, because the internet will influence you to do things that you probably wouldn't do.
Yeah.
because you see everybody so happy from top surgery and you think, well, that can be me. So stay off the internet, which is hard. Mm-hmm. Everybody goes on too much. Just go to therapy, but go to find a therapist that won't affirm you, that'll push back on you, which is hard. I mean, I don't know where you actually find a therapist like that, but they have to be out there somewhere.
Yeah.
Because they follow the WPATH mm-hmm. guide, and that says to affirm. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say push back, but you really need pushback. Like, if someone would have said to me, do you really want your voice to be deep for the rest of your life? I would have said, well, maybe not. Mm-hmm. And I would have never gone on testosterone.
Yeah. Do you feel that you were adequately informed about the risks and side effects of both testosterone or your top surgery?
Top surgery I was, but not testosterone. Testosterone was just, it was probably 5 minutes with the doctor and then the rest of the time with the nurse.
Yeah. I saw you tweeting the other day about how easy it is to get hormones, and you're based in the United States. Can you talk a little bit about that, about how easy it is for kids to get, and in our film, I don't know if you've seen it yet, came out, The Transition Diary, Saving Our Sisters. We interview three wonderful women who went through this, and in their experience, they got testosterone like same day. They called, in some situations called Planned Parenthood, had a over the phone encounter with a clinician, and then was prescribed testosterone same day. So did you find it that easy, and how easy it, can you speak to that?
Well, it's very easy. And now they have two mail order places called Folk and Plume that you have to do a video call to a doctor, but I don't think the doctor ever refuses anybody. Mm. And then they give you a lab to take your blood test, but you get testosterone that day. And I think it's $99 a month.
Wow.
With the testosterone.
Yeah. What about top surgery? Did you find that a little bit more difficult to get? Some people say they have to have a letter. Did insurance pay for it? What was your experience like?
I had a letter from my therapist, and then insurance paid for it all.
And did you get to meet your surgeon? How did that go down?
I met him, I think twice. I met him once for the consult. Mm-hmm. And that's when he told me the truth. He said, your nipples will never have any sensation. And I was like, what? But I still went through with the surgery. And then I saw him pre-op, and he said, you know, pretty much how to clean yourself and stuff like that.
Right.
And right. Then I saw him when he took the drains out, because you have to wear drains to drain the blood and of everything else from your top surgery.
Yeah. Grace in our film, Handle Hormone Hangover, who we referenced earlier, she talks about how days after her surgery, she's like looking down and she just sees these wounds. And she's kind of like, you, like, what have I done? And she talks about how, you know, she Googled it, right? Because we always go to the internet. Does anyone else have this feeling? Is anyone else going through this? And she found that people who transition do commonly have that kind of like, oh no, what have I done? But I wonder how that continues, because also what we learn is the tribe that you hang out with, right? If you're surrounded by other people who are very affirming and like, oh, you can do it, you did the right thing, then it's very easy to kind of talk yourself back into like, okay, no, I am like, this is the train I want to be on. Did you have that sort of community, or you talked about being isolated because you were in COVID? What was your community like, and your friend circle and your family?
Well, my family didn't know. I didn't tell my family. I just told them I was getting a procedure done. But my friends, my trans friends knew, and they took, like, one of them took care of me. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I didn't really speak to them about how I felt. I just kept it inside. And, you know, every time I would take a shower, she would have to help me take my bandages off, and mm-hmm. I would see it and be like, I can't believe I did this. And there's no going back.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just doubt. I mean, you know, you couldn't believe it. And after that, I was full of energy for like the first 2 months. And then after that, I started to get depressed again.
Hmm. And when you decided to get off the train, so to speak, did your friends stay beside you? Were they supportive? What was that experience like? And what's it been like since you've been sharing very publicly on Twitter? What's the reaction been?
On Twitter, there's some hate, but it's pretty much love and support. But there's some people who think I'm a man or think that I'm a plant just to get people to be anti-trans. So I get that. And so I try not to read my mentions very often unless I'm in a good mood or because I don't like to hear the hate. And I don't think anybody does.
No, it's exhausting, right? We don't. Yeah. So anyway, what about your friend circle? Do you feel still supported by your trans friends? Are they there for you when you decided that this was the wrong way to go? Or
no, they pretty much just called me a transphobe after that. And you know, disappeared. I still talk to one of them, but everybody else has pretty much got mad, called me a transphobe and disappeared. And, you know, I haven't heard from them again.
Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that. I'm glad you're getting some much needed support though, from other detransitioners as well. It's sad that we can't disagree, but yet remain friendly and not take it as a personal attack or a personal offense. So talk to me about the side effects that you did have with the testosterone.
Well, before testosterone, I had a 8 kg, and they said my health was perfect and I didn't have high blood pressure or cholesterol or any chance of getting a heart attack. I was in perfect shape. And then 2 years later, when I go back for my blood work, I have high cholesterol and high blood pressure. So that's from there. And then I have urinary problems from testosterone. Because I was actually, my hormones are screwed up and I actually had low testosterone.
And now your voice is lower than before.
Yes.
And what about, you said you were worried about your hair. Did that end up, did you see that side effect?
Yes. I lost my hair. I lost a bunch of hair.
So you have this like seemingly healthy individual and you go to the medical community and you exit a very unhealthy person.
Yeah, I'll be on pills the rest of my life probably.
Yeah. How's that make you feel?
Cheated. I mean, it's like we didn't go over the side effects at my testosterone appointment. I just said I wanted testosterone and they said yes.
Mm-hmm.
When I got testosterone, I was so excited. They wanted to set up a clinic for me to learn how to take a shot, but I was so excited for it because I wanted my breast removed. I was so excited for it. I just looked at videos on YouTube and learned how to inject that way.
Wow.
So I could do it that very night and not have to wait.
Mm-hmm. So what do you feel then? You're an adult, right? I have no idea how old you are, but just as another adult human being, what is your thought then about this as a social contagion and also this being taught in the classroom?
Well, I totally think it's a social contagion because people will write me about, you know, their daughter that's in a friend group. And the friend group is 70% trans. And it's like, well, of course, the friends have an influence, like anorexia in the 80s. That was a social contagion.
Right.
And I think being transgender is a social contagion, too. And, you know, you see these people on YouTube or TikTok. I mean, some doctors even advertise on TikTok now about how great their top surgery is. And
isn't that just Kelly J. Keen talks about that. And oh my goodness, it makes my blood boil. Like, when did we start marketing this stuff on TikTok? You know, it's bad enough that we have drug prescription commercials on TV. I think we're the only country that does that, but now we're showing this on TikTok. But I digress. I'm just angry about that as well.
Yeah, it makes you angry. I mean, because kids see that and she doesn't use drains in her surgery, and that's a big attraction because drains were the worst thing about a double mastectomy.
Yeah.
And she advertises and, you know, kids fall in love with her because she's cool. And they would think they don't like their breast.
Right. Why do you think, though, so many girls? Because, again, our documentary, Detransition Diaries, we focus on women. And because it does seem like young girls are more likely to get the rapid onset gender dysphoria diagnoses. So why do you think more girls rather than boys?
Because girls are closer to their friends, I think. Mm. They're more able to talk about stuff like that. But I don't know how many boys are. I mean, I really don't know much about boys. There's a lot of boys detransitioners, but yeah. I don't know how many boys are actually trans. Mm-hmm. I know they say there's more girls, but I don't, I mean, you just don't hear about the boys unless they're trying to swim on a girls' team.
Yeah. Why do you think that today's kiddos are so easily swayed by this? You know, I mean, I know part of it's marketing, right? TikTok. But why else?
I just think seeing it in the news and hearing about it, because trans people are always pictured as being cool. They don't show the real trans person, like the shop teacher, the famous shop teacher.
Yeah.
I mean, they show the cool people, like, I can't think of their names, but the cool people.
Or supposedly cool, right? Like, let's.
Yeah.
It's definitely, when we were doing research for our first film, Transmission, What's the Rush to Reassign Gender? It's just crazy how Instagram and social media and then Hollywood at large has really kind of promoted this. But let's switch to about what are your thoughts on this being kind of taught and pushed in school?
Well, I think it's wrong. I mean, because people in kindergarten, first grade, second grade asking what your pronouns are. I mean, they shouldn't be talking about pronouns that early.
Yeah. What can parents do? What do you think as an adult?
Join the PTA? I don't know.
Get involved. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because these kids are, I mean, they're being taught by somebody, which is nothing wrong with being taught by somebody that's non-binary or a different gender, but they're being taught pronouns way too early and asking people, you know, of course they're going to ask, teacher, what's non-binary? And she's going to tell them. And then they're going to say, well, I feel like I'm that way too. Mm. And then next thing you know, 70% of the class is transgender.
Yeah. And they're hiding it from parents.
Don't know.
Yeah. So what do you wish if you could go back in time and you're having this gender dysphoria and you're seeking out a provider? What do you wish for any, maybe there's someone listening who's going through this. What do you think would have been a better course of action, or what do you wish?
I wish that she would have asked me, why do you think you're trans? And I would have said, from Facebook. And she'd have been like, you're silly. Why are you getting your sexual orientation from Facebook? And I would have been like, you know, you're right, kind of. And that probably would have ended it. I mean, if she would have just pushed back and said, why is this happening? But it was just like, okay, what's your pronouns? What's your name?
Yeah.
There, you're changed in the system. She diagnosed me with gender dysphoria without even asking me any questions.
It's interesting. Have you seen Matt Walsh's film, What is a Woman?
Yes.
Yeah, there's that therapist, that older gentleman, I think he's a therapist, that he talks and he says that gender affirming care is kind of like an oxymoron because therapists aren't there to affirm. That's not their job. And I thought that was very interesting.
I mean, it was an interesting film. That's why I'm sure he's going to make one, What is Trans?
So what advice would you give a listener today who might be curious about transitioning?
Don't do it. It's the worst mistake of your life. I mean, I believe that there are a few people who are transsexuals, like Blair White or Buck Angel. But I mean, I believe the majority of people are not really trans and they're going to end up regretting it. Just by watching them and seeing them, it's like they're not committed to anything. I mean, I work with people who are non-binary and that's it. They're just non-binary. They haven't changed anything about themselves.
Right.
And you still have to call them they, and it's like so confusing.
So that's for like an adult listener. What about kids? It's really, that's where I kind of get hung up on all of this is the fact that we have people like you who are saying, don't do it. It was the biggest mistake of my life. And yet we're handing out hormone therapy like candy to children. What should parents do besides, you know, go to the PTA? What What can they do? How can we protect our kids from this?
Well, do research on puberty blockers, because doctors say it's irreversible, no damage, but it's all a lie. I mean, the kids get, you know, they never have sexual pleasure because they never have a chance to grow as an adult female or as an adult male. They're on puberty blockers, so they don't get secondary sex characteristics. Their bones get thin. I mean, the harm of puberty blockers, I mean, they're supposed to be used just for pedophiles.
Yeah.
And you're using them on kids. And then as soon as they hit 13, they're on puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones. And then they're medicalized for life. I mean, they're getting top surgery at 15 and 16.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if anybody got top surgery under, I mean, bottom surgery as a female to male under 18, but I mean, the time is coming.
Yeah. I mean, we're already doing top surgery. I was telling someone that the other day and they didn't believe me. They're like, no way are we doing surgery under 18. I was like, are you under a rock? Yes, we are. Yes, we are. And it's sad. What do you think the doctors have to gain from this? I mean, I do think that there are some out there who think that they are doing good. I have to believe that. I have to believe that it's not all just evil people. I think people generally want to help people in the medical field, in the therapeutic world. But what sometimes I just doubt that. And I, you know, like, what's their, do you think it's money motivated? Do you have any other ideas?
Well, when I had my double mastectomy, there was 3 people in my area who did double mastectomies on women like that. And now somebody asked me recently for a reference and said, what doctor did you go to? And I said, well, my doctor moved away, so you can't go to him. And I mentioned the other two. And they went ahead and Googled it and came back with 15 people doing the same double mastectomy. Wow. That, I mean, I've been 4 years past top surgery now. So, I mean, in 4 years, it's grown from 3 to 15 people. So definitely money is a factor. I mean, Medicaid covers top surgery here, and it covers top surgery in a bunch of states. I knew people when I was trans in the community that would quit their job and get on Medicaid just so they could get top surgery with insurance. Wow. And not have to pay anything.
What about bottom surgery?
I don't know much about bottom surgery.
Yeah. You stopped at top surgery. That was your line. Yeah.
I know there's always complications on bottom surgery, and I would never put my body through that.
What would you say to, because, you know, it seems like, and I'm very grateful that every day I log onto Twitter, I see new accounts of people who are finally brave enough or healthy enough, or they just want to help other people by sharing their story who are detransitioning or desisting. What would you say to those folks or to someone who's going through it who hasn't really started sharing their story yet?
Just be brave and start small, and you know, people will find you, because I didn't think anybody would follow me. I had, you know, like 100 followers before I started my talking about my detransition. And then next thing I know, it was 1,000. And now I don't know what it is now. I think it's like 5,000. But
yeah,
I mean, I didn't think people would want to hear my voice. I mean, I saw Hormone Hangover was real popular, but she was on 60 Minutes. So
yeah. I think we're just getting to the point, and I'm hopeful that we're waking up. That's what I hope. I hope that we're waking up and that you guys, the champions of this, the heroes, the people who are saying, hold up, not me, I'm not doing it anymore, and now I'm going to speak out. I'm hoping the tides are turning, and I'm hoping that we can get some traction and just have a conversation about this. The fact that people are silenced and called a TERF, or like you know, just like getting vilified from your community of friends that you used to have, you know, I'm hopeful. Are you hopeful at all, Mary? That
I am hopeful. There's more and more people speaking forward, and the amount of people that listen and support, like if I make a tweet, I might get 3 hate comments and 20 supportive comments, and the supportive comments always rule out of the hate comments. Mm-hmm. And the hate comments are stupid, like, she's a man, don't listen to her, she's a plant. And I mean, that's stupid. People aren't going to believe that.
Like, what is a plant? This is the first time I'm hearing this. Maybe I'm just ignorant, but that seems like so silly. Like, I'm so sorry. That seems, it's like, are we back? Like, are we third graders again? Like, I don't understand.
Well, a plant on the right to get the people on the left to think that being trans isn't good.
Oh, so it's a political comment, basically.
Yeah, they think that I'm not real. Because sometimes, and I'm guilty, I think everybody's guilty of it, I'm at work and I get angry and I write a tweet about the men in my department that are, say they're women and they use my bathroom, and I get mad and I don't use proper English because I'm so mad. And then I write a tweet where I think about it. And so they're like, well, there's two people different tweeting your account.
Oh.
And it's like, no, it's just me. I just get mad and regret the tweet later.
And then I can't think and type and all that. Yeah. So let's talk about that if you're willing. So you at your workspace have men who say that they're women and use your facilities.
Yeah. I mean, all they do is put on a dress and a wig, and I don't think they're on estrogen or anything like that. Not that if they're on estrogen, I'd be okay with them, but it would be easier. And I had a situation where I walked in on one of them and he was standing up peeing and had the bathroom door open. And I walked in and saw it, and it was like, and he said the door slipped open and he was peeing already, so he didn't want to make a mess and shut the door.
Goodness. Do you ever feel unsafe?
I don't feel unsafe because there's a lot of people.
Right.
It's a busy workplace, but
sure.
I mean, I don't like it. I mean, it's because I don't know. I just expect them to treat the bathroom like women used it, not men.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they pee everywhere. And
well, and I think, you know, we talk about the bathrooms a lot. People are like, oh, the bathroom debate. But I think that's just like kind of like signifies kind of everything, right? Women's spaces, you know, it always comes back to the bathroom, but men don't belong in women's spaces. They don't belong in women's prisons. They don't belong in women's homeless shelters. They don't belong in women's crisis shelters. And so.
Yeah, I agree. They definitely don't deserve. I mean, there was that one case where the man was in prison and got 3 inmates pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Well, in California, we hand out condoms in women's prisons. Tell me, why do women's prisons need condoms?
To put on the pickles.
Yeah. So anyway, we're digressing a little bit. Is there anything, Mary, that you, in your journey through this and through wading through this, is there anything that really has become your like platform or something that you really want people to know about?
Well, I think that I'd really like to help at least one person not transition. And I don't know if somebody thinking about transition would ever look at a detransitioner's account, or maybe their parents would look at it and say, look at this person and look at all the troubles she had on testosterone. Do you sure you really want to go on testosterone? Mm-hmm. And that's my hope. And I mean, to educate people about it, because a lot of people hear about women, men becoming women, but they don't hear about women becoming men. And we don't hear about the effects. So educating people on that and just tweeting about my general life, but people don't like that. They only like it when I talk about the trans stuff.
Yeah. Well, you have an important voice and I appreciate you sharing it. I enjoy reading all of your tweets, even about your parrot, right? You have a parrot?
Yes, Ollie. Yes.
Aw. I'm also an avid animal lover. So tweet away about your animals in your life. Well, Mary, I just want to say thank you for joining. I'd like to just give a quote from Mary's Twitter to kind of end our podcast today, because I just think you kind of sum it up here. But you say on September 9th, I'm so tired of seeing young men and women becoming victims of the trans cult. I see them in the street with their pronoun pins and their multicolored hair. I just want to hug them and say, please don't start testosterone or estrogen. Don't ruin your life. And I feel like that kind of summarizes what you've said. You want to share your story so that you can help others who might consider this and think that this is the route that they need to go. Folks who are listening or watching on YouTube, you can find Mary on Twitter, and I encourage you go and follow her with the handle Fan Da Flames, and I love it. FANDAFLAMES, Fan Da Flames. Mary, is there anything else you'd like to add before we say our goodbyes?
I got that handle 10 years ago or 11 years ago because I was a fan of the Calgary Flames, but now I think it fits.
Oh, it totally fits. I thought it was because I'm like, fan those flames, girl, like do it. let's get a riot and a fire started about this. I think
that, yeah, definitely. Yeah. We definitely need to riot over the puberty blockers.
Yes, we do. Yes. Well, it's been an absolute privilege to have you on the show. Thank you for taking time out of your day to chat with me and share your very personal story. We'll continue following you. Like I said, you can find Mary on Twitter. I encourage you to go do that. I'd like to thank each and every listener and subscriber for tuning in. Our goal is, as ever, to facilitate and create conversation and discussion and to get everyone to think beyond the masses. Thank you for joining.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes, too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.